This is Audible.
Wizard. The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. Biography of a Genius. By Mark J. Cipher. Narrated by Simon Preble. Copyright 1996 by Mark J. Cipher. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Mark J. Cipher, care of John W. White Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2011 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Forward. Nikola Tesla was my father's uncle, and as such he was treated by our family much as any uncle might have been who lived at a considerable distance and was advanced in years. But there were stronger bonds between my father and Tesla than might otherwise have been the case. They came from identical social backgrounds, sons of Serbian Orthodox priests, born and raised a few miles apart in the Austro-Hungarian military frontier district county of Lika in the province of Croatia. My grandmother was Tesla's sister, Angelina. They were the only members of a relatively limited extended family to emigrate to America, and they were the only members to undertake science and technology as their life's work. My father, Nicholas J. John Terbo, Nikola Jovo Teberjevich, was 30 years younger than his uncle, came to America 30 years after him, and died 30 years after Tesla. Tesla was already famous as my father was growing up, and he became a model for my father's technical career. Father held about 175 U.S. and foreign patents, the most important of which was his 1923 basic patent of the hypoid gear, used on the vast majority of the world's cars since 1930. The hypoid gear introduced advanced mathematics to the art of gear design, much as Tesla's work united electrical theory and electrical engineering. Tesla henceforth proudly referred to my father as my nephew, the mathematician. But these patents brought considerable financial as well as professional recognition to my father, was also not lost on the often cash-poor Tesla. Because the ethnic and professional similarities between Nikola Tesla and my father were so striking, I feel that I've been granted a special privilege through this comparison in understanding Tesla's private personality, including his well-developed sense of humor and his often cavalier disregard for money. Once, when Tesla was visiting us in the early 1930s, my father took him to lunch at the Book Cadillac Hotel, then the finest in Detroit. They arrived late, only a few minutes before a cover charge of $2 or $3 would end. This was equivalent to $20 or $30 by today's standards. My father suggested waiting, but Tesla would hear none of it. They sat down amid a flurry of waiters, and Tesla ordered a chafing dish, bread and milk, and proceeded to prepare his own lunch to his own specifications, to my father's amusement and the unease of the maitre d'. I had not yet reached 13 when Tesla died in January 1943, and I did not have the sense of the ending of an epoch marked by his passing both for our family and for an era of individualism in scientific discovery. I may have reflected with some uneasiness that I had had the opportunity to meet Tesla some 3 or 4 years earlier, and that no further meetings would ever happen again. I remembered my reluctance to be dragged to the meeting in his suite at the Hotel New Yorker, when my mother and I were spending a few days in New York before returning to Detroit after our summer vacation at the Jersey Shore. I would have preferred spending more time at Radio City Music Hall, or at the docks watching the ocean liners. I was shy, rather overwhelmed, and spoke hardly a word to this very tall, very gaunt old man. I would have been repelled, as any young all-American boy should have been, to be hugged and kissed by this stranger, if my father hadn't often done the same. This is the way my mother's women friends often acted, but my American mother's brother would have only given me a firm handshake. Little did I realize that Tesla's hugging, kissing, and patting my head would belie his famous idiosyncrasy of an overriding phobia of germs. Surely a young boy would have been teeming with germs. One could therefore speculate that this idiosyncrasy was possibly an affectation designed to preserve his space. While Tesla lived, some considerable degree of his fame endured, in no small measure because of his ability to stimulate the media. However, after his death, the nation and the world were occupied with other more pressing matters: war and reconstruction, international political realignments, an unmatched explosion of new technology, a new consumer society, and Tesla's fame and recognition nearly evaporated. Only a few in the U.S. and international scientific communities, and the abiding respect and admiration of Serbs and all Yugoslavs worldwide, kept his name alive. My awareness of a resurgence of interest in the life and works of Nikola Tesla began in the early 1970s, when I moved from Los Angeles, where it seemed no one had ever heard of Tesla, to Washington, D.C., where at least the name was recognized. In February 1975, my mother phoned to tell me that she had read in the Los Angeles Times that Uncle Nikola was to be inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame, and that I should look into it. I chanced to notice on a local TV news program that evening a short segment monitoring the Hall of Fame and an interview with a girl of 10 or 12 who had invented a new can opener, or some such. I dismissed the hall as a commercial promotion and went on to something else. Only later did I read a newspaper account about the induction of Tesla, along with Orville and Wilbur Wright, Samuel F.B. Morse, and Tesla's nemesis, Guglielmo Marconi, and citing the hall's sponsorship by the U.S. Department of Commerce's Patent and Trademark Office. The closest living relative of each honoree was to receive the induction diploma at an elaborate ceremony. Lacking any Tesla, or even any Terboyevich, to represent the family, an officer of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, IEEE, accepted the Tesla diploma. The IEEE considers Tesla one of the 12 apostles of electrical science and continues to offer an annual prize in the field of power engineering in his name. When I presented myself at the patent office a few weeks later, they were delighted and made arrangements to make a second presentation to me at the 1976 award ceremony held that year at Congress Hall in Philadelphia as part of the U.S. Bicentennial Year celebration. Since then, there has been an earnest revival of interest in the technological accomplishments of Nikola Tesla and in his personality, philosophy, and culture as well. Part of the drama of his life is that he was a man who not only revolutionized the generation and distribution of electrical energy and made basic contributions to many other facets of modern technology, but that he did so without the specific aim of amassing great wealth. This altruism, which is often criticized as poor business sense, imposed a monetary limitation on future experimentation to test his new innovations. Who knows what advances might have been possible if he'd been able to validate them through rigorous experimentation. New science is an expensive endeavor, and finding financial support is a frustrating task for even those as focused as Tesla. Among the associations that have supported the Tesla Renaissance are the Tesla Memorial Society, which I helped found in 1979, and of which I am pleased to be its honorary chairman and chairman of its executive board, and the International Tesla Society, founded in 1983, and of which I am a life member. It was while speaking at the first ITS Biannual Tesla Symposium in 1984 that I first met a fellow speaker, Dr. Mark J. Cipher, in person. His paper, The Lost Wizard, was the seed from which his new Tesla biography has sprung. I have been impressed with Dr. Cipher's dedication and scholarship in developing his early theories into a well-rounded examination of the mystery of Tesla's great genius. One of the things that has most intrigued me about a new work on this topic is how much new information keeps surfacing. Dr. Cipher has researched minor characters in Tesla's life as well as the many major ones. This has given him additional insight into Tesla's life and allowed the development of new and different interpretations of many important events, such as the failure of the Wardenclyffe Tower project. Dr. Seifer provides a new look at Tesla's college years, the time when many of his epochal ideas were forming. He's uncovered new information on Tesla's relationship with a number of key individuals, such as his editor, Thomas Comerford Martin, and financial backers John Jacob Astor and John Hayes Hammond. A great strength of Wizard is its adherence, chapter by chapter, to a rather strict chronology, which makes it easy to follow the breadth and scope of Tesla's life and achievements in an orderly fashion. I congratulate Dr. Seifer on a decade's journey with Nikola Tesla, and am pleased to introduce to you Wizard. William H. Turbo, Honorary Chairman, Tesla Memorial Society. Preface. In 1976, while involved in research at the New York Public Library, I stumbled upon a strange text entitled Return of the Dove, which claimed that there was a man not born of this planet who landed as a baby in the mountains of Croatia in 1856. Raised by Earth parents, an avatar had arrived for the sole purpose of inaugurating the new age. By providing humans with a veritable cornucopia of inventions, he had created, in essence, the technological backbone of the modern era. His name was Nikola Tesla, and his inventions included the induction motor, the electrical power distribution system, fluorescent and neon lights, wireless communication, remote control, and robotics. Tesla? Who's he? I said to myself, because my father had been a TV repairman for several years in the early 1950s, and I had spent part of my childhood accompanying him on his house calls, helping put up antennas, test and buy radio tubes, play with oscilloscopes, and watch him build TVs. I was amazed that I had never heard of this man. I remember vividly an event from my grade school years on Long Island that prepared me for my latter-day interest. It was a Saturday, circa 1959, and I was working on a Boy Scout assignment when I came upon a design for a crystal radio set. My father and I gathered a glass jar and a set of headphones, a crystal detector for changing the ambient AC radio waves into audio DC pulses, some thin copper wire to be wrapped around the jar, a metal switch that was scraped across this coil for the dial, a small plank to hold the contraption together, and 100 feet of normal rubber-coated wire for the antenna, which we strung out a second-story window. There was no plug. All energy was derived from the broadcast signals from the nearby radio stations. However, after hooking it all together, the reception was faint. I became discouraged. My father paced the room considering the problem, muttering, "Something's wrong." After a few moments of deep thought, he made a motion which said, "I've got it." Walking over to our radiator and dragging another wire which he had hooked up to the jar, Dad attached a ground connection. Suddenly, all the stations began to come in loud and clear, and I marked each of them on the jar along the coil. It was apparent to me then that electrical power was being transmitted from these stations by wireless means, and that the Earth somehow was intrinsically linked to this system. And now, here I was, nearly 20 years later, 2 years out of graduate school with a master's degree, well-read and somewhat knowledgeable about electronics, yet I had never heard of the principal inventor of the very device I had spent endless hours with as a kid. This astonished me in a way difficult to describe. Moreover, when I asked my father about Tesla, he barely knew of him. Because I believe in seeking original sources, I began to research Tesla's life, starting with the two existing biographies, John O'Neill's classic Prodigal Genius and Inez Hunt and Juanetta Draper's Lightning in His Hand. Soon after, I began tracking down numerous turn-of-the-century references and also the weighty Nikola Tesla lectures, patents, articles produced by the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Thus, I was able to ascertain, by following his actual patents, that indeed Tesla existed, and that his work was fundamental to all these creations. That Tesla's name was so little known puzzled me. So in 1980, 3 years after writing my first article on him, I began a doctoral dissertation on his life. My major purpose was to address the question of name obscurity. During the writing of my dissertation, several notable Tesla works were compiled. These included the comprehensive and encyclopedic Dr. Nikola Tesla Bibliography by Leland Anderson and John Ratzlaff. Tesla's 1919 autobiography, republished by Hart Brothers. Margaret Cheney's biography, Tesla, Man Out of Time. 2 compendiums of Tesla's writing by John Ratzlaff. Colorado Springs Notes, produced by the Tesla Museum. And most recently, Leland Anderson's edition of Tesla's private testimony to his lawyers on the history of wireless communication. Even with all this new material, however, no comprehensive, all-embracing treatise had been achieved. In fact, after studying all these texts, a number of contradictions and glaring mysteries remained. These included not only Tesla's obscure early years, tenure at college, and relationship to such key people as Thomas Edison, Guglielmo Marconi, George Westinghouse, and J.P. Morgan, but also the worth of Tesla's accomplishments and his exact place in the development of these inventions. This book attempts to solve the mysteries. Because there have been significant gaps in the record, a clear chronology of Tesla's life is presented. Also addressed are such issues as why his name dropped into obscurity after being a page one subject in newspapers around the world at the turn of the century, why he never received the Nobel Prize, even though he was nominated for one, what Tesla did during the World Wars, and whether his plan for transmitting electrical power by wireless was feasible. Using a psycho-historical perspective, the text discusses not only those factors that led to Tesla's genius, but also quirks that led to his undoing. In this vein, it delineates Tesla's relationship to many of his well-known associates, such as John Jacob Astor, T.C. Martin, J.P. Morgan, Sr. and Jr., John Hayes Hammond, Sr. and Jr., Michael Pupin, Stanford White, Mark Twain, Rudyard Kipling, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, George Sylvester Viereck, Titus DeBobula, and J. Edgar Hoover. Many of these people are barely touched upon or are not discussed at all in other treatises. Because Tesla's life is so controversial and complex, I also examine such questions as whether Tesla received impulses from outer space, why he ultimately failed in his partnership with J.P. Morgan in constructing a multifunctional global wireless system for distributing power and information, what his exact relationship to Robert and Katherine Johnson was, and what exactly happened to his particle beam weaponry system and secret papers. Since I've based the text largely on first-hand documents rather than on the existing biographies, this book offers an essentially new view of Tesla's life. The most recent biography, Tesla, by Tad Wise, an admittedly fictionalized version of the inventor's life, was not referred to herein, as the goal of the enclosed is to separate out the myth and uncover who Tesla really was. However, one of Wise's most prominent stories, that Tesla was responsible for the peculiar explosion that devastated Tunguska, Siberia, in June of 1908, is addressed in a new appendix for this second edition. I have visited all major Tesla archival centers, such as at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., Columbia University in New York City, and the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. And because I've also utilized the Freedom of Information Act and accessed the arcane network of Tesla's researchers, I've been able to compile hundreds of documents that have never been discussed before by any Tesla biographies. In addition, because I'm a handwriting analyst, I've also utilized that expertise to analyze a number of the key personalities involved. Through this means, and as a total surprise, I've also been able to discover a heretofore unreported emotional collapse that the inventor suffered in 1906 at the time of the failing of his great wireless enterprise. Since Tesla lived until the age of 86, the story spans nearly a century. Revered as a demigod by some in the New Age community, Tesla has, at the same time, been relegated to virtual non-person status by influential segments of the corporate and academic communities. Often billed as a wizard from another world who drew thunderbolts from the skies, Tesla himself helped support the supernatural persona by comparing himself to the Almighty and by frequently grabbing headlines with his sensational talk of interplanetary communication. Because his accomplishments are prodigious, fundamental, and documented, the elimination of his name from many history books is not forgivable. Only by understanding why this occurred can we, as a modern people, hope to rectify the historical record for future generations. Curiously, the further away we've moved from Tesla's death, the more material on his life has come to the fore. In particular, we must thank John O'Neill, the Tesla Memorial Society, the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, and the International Tesla Society, ITS, for this occurrence, and the many Tesla researchers who've written so much about him of late and have participated in the various ITS conferences held every other year since 1984 at the site of some of his most spectacular experiments in Colorado Springs. Because Tesla's eye was always on the future, it seems appropriate to conclude this introduction with the opening lines from his autobiography. They are as true today, as we enter the 21st century, as they were three generations ago when they were written. The progressive development of man is vitally dependent on invention. It is the most important product of his creative brain. Its ultimate purpose is the complete mastery of mind over the material world, the harnessing of the forces of nature to human needs. This is the difficult task of the inventor, who is often misunderstood and unrewarded. But he finds ample compensation in the pleasing exercises of his powers and in the knowledge of being one of that exceptionally privileged class without whom the race would have long ago perished in the bitter struggle against pitiless elements. Speaking for myself, I have already had more than my full measure of this exquisite enjoyment, so much that for many years my life was little short of continuous rapture. 1. Heritage. Hardly is there a nation which has met with a sadder fate than the Servians. From the height of its splendor, when the empire embraced almost the entire northern part of the Balkan Peninsula and a large portion of what is now Austria, the Servian nation was plunged into abject slavery after the fateful battle of 1389 at the Kosovo Polje against the overwhelming Asian hordes. Europe can never repay the great debt it owes to the Servians for checking, by the sacrifice of its own liberty, that barbarian influx. Nikola Tesla. It was during a crackling summer storm in Smiljan, a small hamlet at the back edge of a plateau set high in the mountains, when Nikola Tesla was born. The Serbian family resided in the province of Lika, a plateau and gentle river valley in Croatia, where wild boar and deer still dwell, and farmers still travel on ox-drawn wagons. Only a cart ride from the Adriatic, the land is well protected from invasion by sea by the Velebit Ridge to the west, which runs the length of the province and towers over the coastline as a steep cliff, and by the Dinaric Alps to the east, a chain of mountains that emerge from Austria, span the Balkan Peninsula, and culminate in the south as the Isle of Crete. Though hidden, Smiljan was centrally located, 15 miles east of the tiny seaport of Karlobag, 6 miles west of the bustling town of Gospić, and 45 miles southwest of the cascading wonder known as Plitvice Lakes, an interlinking chasm of caves and streams and magnificent waterfalls that lie at the base of the Dinaric chain. In the early 1800s, having been briefly part of Napoleon's Illyrian provinces, Croatia was now a domain of Austria-Hungary. With its neighboring Slavic countries of Bosnia, Herzegovina, Montenegro, Serbia, and Slovenia, Croatia was sandwiched between the ruling Habsburg dynasty to the north and the Ottoman Empire to the south. In ancient times, and for many centuries, much of the coastline along the Adriatic was ruled by the Illyrians, a piratical tribe believed to have descended from regions around Austria. Successfully protecting their borders from such rulers as Alexander the Great, many Illyrians rose into social prominence. Some, at the time of Christ, became emperors. Slavs, travelling in close-knit clans known as Sadrugas, were first recognised by the Byzantines in the 2nd century AD in the areas around what is now Belgrade. Tesla's appearance resembled the characteristic features of the Gags, a tribe described as being tall and having convex-shaped noses and flat skulls. Like other Slavs, these people were originally pagans and worshipped nature spirits and a god of thunder and lightning. Tesla's early ancestors were probably born in the Ukraine. They most likely travelled down through Romania into Serbia and lived near Belgrade along the Danube. After the Battle of Kosovo in the latter part of the 14th century, they crossed the Kosovo plains into Montenegro and continued their migration northward into Croatia in the latter part of the 18th century. All Slavs speak the same language. The major distinction between Croats and Serbs stems from the differences in the histories of their respective countries. The Croats adopted the Pope as their spiritual leader and followed the Roman form of Catholicism. The Serbs adopted a Byzantine patriarch and the Greek Orthodox view. Whereas Roman priests remain celibate, Greek Orthodox priests may marry. In the east and central regions, Slavs were more successful in maintaining their own control over what came to be called the Kingdom of Serbia. Whereas in the west, in Croatia, outside rulers such as Charlemagne in AD 800 occupied the region. While Croatia maintained the Christianization policies of the Franks, the Serbs and Bulgarians drove out the papacy and revived their own pagan faith, which included animal sacrifice and pantheism. Many of the ancient pagan gods were made saints and were celebrated in higher esteem than Jesus. Tesla's patron saint Nicholas was a 4th century god who protected sailors. To further alienate the two groups, although speaking the same verbal language, Croats adopted the Latin alphabet, whereas Serbs and Bulgarians took on the Cyrillic alphabet used by the Greek Orthodox Church. Before Turkish rule, from the 9th century until the 1300s, Serbia had maintained autonomy. For Serbia, this period was its golden age, as the Byzantines accepted its autonomous status. Due to the philanthropic nature of its kings, a dynamic medieval art flourished, and great monasteries were erected. Croatia, on the other hand, was in much more turmoil. Influenced by Western Europe, the ruling class attempted unsuccessfully to institute a feudal system of lords and serfs. This policy directly opposed the inherent structure of the democratic Zadrugas, and so Croatia was never able to establish a unified identity. Nevertheless, one independent offshoot of Croatia, Ragusa, Dubrovnik, which had established itself as a port of commerce and a rival of Venice as a major sea power, became a melting pot for South Slavic culture and a symbol for the Aurelian ideal of a unified Yugoslavia. The identity of Serbia as a nation, however, changed for all time on June 15, 1389, the day 30,000 Turks obliterated the Serbian nation in the Battle of Kosovo. Cruel conquerors, the Turks destroyed Serbian churches or converted them to mosques. Drafting the healthiest male children into their armies, they skewered and tortured the men and forced the women to convert and marry Turks. Many Serbs fled, taking up residence in the craggy mountains of Montenegro or the hidden valleys of Croatia. Some of those that remained became wealthy as Turkish vassals. Others, mostly of mixed blood, became pariahs. The Battle of Kosovo is as important to the Serbs as the Exodus to the Jews or the crucifixion to the Christians. It is commemorated every year on the anniversary of the tragedy as Vidov Dan, the day when we shall see. As one Serb told the author, it follows us always. The massacre and ensuing defilement of the kingdom became the dominant motif of the great epic poems which served to unify the identity of the Serbian people through their centuries of hardship. Unlike the Croats, who didn't have this kind of all-embracing exigency, the Serbs had Kosovo, Combined with their adherence to the Greek Orthodox religion in a twofold way, Serbs, no matter where they lived, felt united. The century of Tesla's birth was marked by